Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 282 of the Falcoholic Live. I'm your host, Kevin Knight, at Falcoholic Kevin, joined by a wonderful guest this evening. He is Will McFadden, at Will McFadden, host of the Believe in Falcons podcast, also a fellow contributor extraordinaire over at thefalcoholic.com. Will, welcome back to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, man. I'm missing Survivor for this. So this is how important that you and the fellow Falcoholics are. I'm also currently pulling up our the YouTube feed because I like to have that going in the on the other monitor so I can just, you know, keep tabs of all of the mean things that everybody's saying about me. So I've got my eye on you. But no, I'm excited to get into to the draft talk, excited to talk about some of the smaller signings that they've had. But thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely get into the draft. That is the topic that we're all interested in at this point, with just a little over 2 weeks, I guess, now until we get to the draft itself. Of course, we will be having the draft party once again on all three nights of the draft. Shout out to George Costanza for once again providing us with some NFL Shop gift cards to give away on all 3 days. So make sure you tune in, you know, for the coverage, but also you could win an NFL Shop gift card, you know, just in case you needed extra incentive to tune in to those draft shows. And, you know, who else are you going to watch, really? You know, I mean, maybe Will, if Will was going live all day, maybe Will will be on with us. I don't know. We haven't gotten that far. You know, you can tell how far I've planned this out. But yes, we will be getting into that. We will be, of course, on tonight's show, focusing on the top of the draft, the options at 8th overall, the recent signings, does that change anything, the rumors of trades and potential trades and so on, and basically how the top of the draft, how the Falcons are likely to navigate that and how it will impact sort of the rest of their plans. We'll get into all that. Of course, we'll be taking your questions throughout as well. And we will be getting into all of those topics on tonight's show. So welcome in, everyone. What's up, Robert Kelly, Jail Hunt, Ghost Up. Thanks for joining us tonight. Before we get started, I want to bring you guys a quick word from our sponsor, BetOnline.ag. Folks, BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, with MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats coming in hot. The NBA, I know, for Hawks fans, is coming down to the wire. The Hawks, I believe, are the final play-in team at this stage. Looks like Trae Young's going to be back tonight, so that's exciting, right? Maybe some optimism there. I know the Hawks have been ravaged with injury. Poor Adnan has been going through it, but the playoffs still very much a realistic opportunity for the Atlanta. So you could be betting on that. The Braves, I think we got some bad news on Spencer Strider. Not that I follow baseball that much, but that seems pretty dire. But the Braves are seemingly still winning because they seem like they're really good. So, you know, maybe you go that route. Maybe, you know, the Falcons aren't here. You can't lose your money on the Falcons. Maybe you can win money on the other Atlanta sports teams. Probably more likely to be the Braves than the Hawks, it seems like, based on the overall cognoscenti of sports fandom. But no matter what you do, guys, go to BetOnline, where you can get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So head to that website today, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right. Well, let's dive in to the 8th overall pick. And it's interesting because the Falcons are probably going to have more or less their pick of the defensive players. Like, it's very possible that zero defensive players go before the Falcons are on the clock. They potentially could have an option to get one of the top three receivers. The top corner could be there. The top edge could be there. And of course, there's debate in this class, particularly about who the top edge and top corner are. But it seems like more and more likely that defense will be the pick given the players that are likely to go ahead of Atlanta's pick. So curious, you know, your initial thoughts on looking at how the board is likely to fall. And I know we talked about this on Believe in Falcons a little bit too, when we were on the clock in your live mock draft, about the direction you think the Falcons will go. I mean, they have made a few signings that we'll get into, but you know, at this point, your gut feeling, what do you think the direction the team is sort of leaning? I don't think any of us have any sources for this. This is just sort of, you know, feeling it out the old fashioned way. But what are you sort of thinking at this stage based on Atlanta's offseason thus far?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think whoever the top center prospect is, that's who they're going to take at 8. I mean, lock it in at this point. You know,
you got to solidify the trenches, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Whether that's Zach Frazier or, you know, Powers Johnson, forgetting his first name there, and Jackson. Kid out of Duke, Graham Barton. So
yeah.
One of those guys, just lock it in. No, I think that you're right. Like, they're going to have their pick, certainly of probably the defensive guys. But I think that you like us, like all of us, the Falcons have a pretty clear idea of how the top at least maybe five are going to go, five or six. And it feels like at this point, four quarterbacks are going to be taken in kind of that top six. And that's great news for the Falcons. And it also, I think, really explains why, in hindsight, Kirk Cousins may have been their top option. Because, yes, this is a great quarterback class, but it's a bad year to be a quarterback needy team because there are so many of them. And I think that the Falcons felt that the best way to control their own destiny was to handle that, not in a free-for-all for the draft where you're overpaying to maybe get your third or fourth choice, but it's a choice made out of necessity. So they have done, in my opinion, a really good job of once again kind of laying the groundwork to then have all options on the table. And this is where things do get really interesting. And if they pick at 8 and they stay at 8 and they take any player, regardless of who it is, there's going to be a large contingent that feels they could have traded back and gotten that player at 15 to 19. You know, that's just people think that they know exactly how the draft is going to fall at this point for some reason. But whether that's Dallas Turner, whether that's Latu, what have you, if the Falcons pick him at 8, then that's where he this whole time was supposed to go, because that's where he went. So like, that's kind of my feelings on the draft. But that being said, I do think there's a stronger chance than ever right now that the Falcons do look for a trade back partner. I think that if they stick at 8, it probably will be an edge rusher, and that they would have one of the three guys that we've talked about this whole process ranked in the top 10 as they stack their board, and kind of in that top tier, maybe the fringe, like tier 1, tier 2, depending on how big their tier 1 is. But again, I'm thinking that as we get closer and closer to the draft, that they make a lot of sense for potentially being a trade back candidate for a team looking to trade up. And the reason that I say that is I think that Rome Odunze could be there at 8. I personally love Rome Odunze, but I know that he is kind of the consensus third receiver behind Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. I love the dog in him, but like, I would be happy if the Falcons took him, but I think that he's still going to be available at pick 8. I don't know if he makes past Chicago. So if you are a receiver needy team, and in my most recent mock draft, I had the LA Chargers trading back with the Vikings coming up and getting their guy at quarterback, the Chargers sitting there at 11, and then trading back up with Atlanta to go grab Rome Odunze before the Bears picked. And I think that there's something like that that is absolutely in play. And if you're Atlanta, I think moving back to like that 11 to 14 range should be right in their wheelhouse, because they could still get probably like a Tarion Arnold or a Quavion Mitchell, Quavion Mitchell, depending on who they like there, more out of the corner, or one of those three edge rushers is certainly going to be still on the board. So as I've been thinking a little bit more about it, I think that a trade back scenario makes a lot of sense. And I can even get into some more reasons a little bit later on as we can continue our conversation.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you there. I think the best avenue for a trade down, and I do think that ultimately Fontenot is interested in trading down. I think he typically has been open to it. It's just, I think most years he wants to make sure they're getting enough value to make it worth their while. And I think the wide receiver being there is probably the best opportunity for the Falcons to trade down, because I think there's that clear tier of those top three guys with,
yes,
you know, Harrison. I don't think any of us think Harrison's going to be there, but Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Romo Odunze. And depending on, you know, I think most people have Nabers as number two and Odunze as three, but it could fall a little bit differently. Either way, if one of those guys does make it to eight, getting in front of the Bears is paramount if somebody actually wants a shot at those guys. And, you know, in the SB Nation mock draft, I've talked about it on Twitter. Like, I got a crazy offer from the Rams to go all the way down to 19, where they gave up their 2025 first and, you know, a day two pick this year as well. And I was like, okay, well, I kind of have to take that. Like, that's a crazy offer. And at this point, it looks like I will still get one of the three edge rushers at 19. We're not sure yet, but only one defensive player has gone in that mock draft so far, and it's Dallas Turner.
Wow.
So, you know, all like six quarterbacks went, and like a bunch of offensive tackles, and then Dallas Turner. So obviously the receivers too, but you know, we'll see what happens. Either way, we're going to get a corner if it's not one of the edgers. So yeah. I think most fans would probably be pretty happy with that, but
give me Cooper DeJean, man. And I will sleep well at night.
That pro day was awesome. So I've never been off the Cooper DeJean train, but I think, you know, like Terrion Arnold, DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell are all worthy players too. I know that the edge is kind of the screaming need at this point, so that seems to be where they're potentially leaning. But if they want to trade down, like you said, the wide receiver being there is sort of the key. You know, the Rams were trading up for Joe Alt, funny enough, where the receivers all went and then Joe Alt was still there.
Even,
so it's like, yeah.
Even the tackle, like as good as Joe Alt is, you've got like five other tackles that may not be in that top tier, although there are some that you could probably put in the same tier as Joe Alt. It's just the clear discrepancy between those top three receivers and even another really good receiver class. That's kind of the secret sauce, I think, for Atlanta in a trade back scenario. It is that drop off, which really you couldn't say about any other position because the quarterbacks will have already gone.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously if like the fourth quarterback were to fall to eight, that would be an opportunity to trade down to. But I just think given everything that's happened with the Vikings trading, you know, sort of preemptively trading to pick up another first round pick to maneuver. I mean, it's pretty clear they're trying to get up into the top five for the fourth quarterback, whoever that might be. So it doesn't seem like that's realistic, but.
And what if it's Arizona? You know, like what if they trade up with Arizona? Arizona moves back to 11.
Yes.
And then they still want their receiver.
Yes.
And so it kind of makes a lot of sense right there. But I think we're in agreement that the receiver is kind of the key part of this.
Yeah. Yeah. And like compensation wise, like I know a lot of people are like, oh, we should be demanding firsts and seconds and all this like that. That's probably not likely unless you're moving down. Like maybe like 12, you could get a second for that move. You know, 11, you could probably work out a second, but it depends on the team. Like,
maybe,
for instance, you know, the Vikings don't have a second, so they're not going to trade their second, obviously. The Jets don't have a second at 10. I believe the Broncos don't have a second at 12 either. The Raiders do, so that could be a potential team. And the Raiders, you know, could be interested in various things as well. So, but yeah, you may have to be flexible if you really want a second. You may have to take a future second along with a pot sweetener sort of this year, and maybe that's fine too. Like I don't think accumulating future picks is a problem necessarily either, but
well, here's the other aspect that I was and this is in my my mailbag that's coming out on the Falcoholic tomorrow, so be sure to check that out, but I'll give it to you guys here early. But I was doing a little bit of research into just the Falcons cap situation, and another reason why I think a trade back makes a lot of sense is that throughout the Arthur Smith years, which we don't have to get into any more than just what I'm about to say, they were, for a lot of reasons, being very, very conscious of their cap and the money that they were tying into the number of players that they were tying that money into, right? Because where the Falcons got upside down under Thomas Dimitroff was investing too much money in too few of players and expecting those players then to carry the rest of the roster. And it was a stars and scrubs type of team. They have really tried to build more of a balanced team. But if you project out just 1 year because they had to give so much money to Kirk Cousins, that has again gotten them in a little bit of a tricky spot. They will have five players next year accounting for roughly 45% of their salary cap. And those players are Jesse Bates, obviously Kirk Cousins, Jake Matthews, Grady Jarrett, and Chris Lindstrom, right? I think there's a chance that you see, you know, Jake Matthews, Grady Jarrett, probably Caleb McGarry because he's sixth on that list. Those guys, you know, we could in a year from now be talking about, have we seen the last of them in Falcons uniforms? I know that sounds crazy right now, certainly for like Grady Jarrett and Jake Matthews, but those are hard decisions they will have to make. So I think it really behooves them to stockpile more young contracts or cheap contracts with young players in the draft. And so I wonder if instead of maybe a second round pick next year, would they be okay with, hey, give us three day three picks, you know, give us a third and then we'll take two fives, right? Like, I wonder if the asking price, what it would be in just a totally neutral situation, maybe a little bit different for the Falcons because they could use just more younger bodies on cheaper contracts in a year from now and 2 years from now when they have to turn this roster over again, that you could easily say that, hey, just take a second next year, and that's still a young, cheap contract next year, which is when all the money comes due. But it's just something to think about. Do you have any preferred approach given kind of what I just shared?
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes sense. Like, we saw the Rams just invest in a ton of rookies last year. Like, they ended up making all these picks, and people were like, no, they have all these picks. They're definitely going to trade some because this is a comical number of rookies. No, they made all the picks, and they kept all the rookies. And it actually worked out really well for them. It's obviously...
They needed to.
Yeah, they did need to. And they desperately needed the rookies to hit because of the salary cap. And, you know, the other upside to drafting a lot of rookies is that you typically then can have a lot of guys coming up for contracts that people are interested in. You know, this is the Ravens method. And we know, and Joe Schmo just mentioned it in the chat, like Fontenot has said that he's been inspired by Ozzie Newsome. That's a guy that he wants to model the team after the way that he does things. And that's the Ravens strategies. Make a ton of picks and let some guys walk in exchange for comp picks, re-sign your guys, but don't really overspend in free agency. And I think the Falcons obviously had to go spend money in free agency because they're not where they need to be roster wise. But, you know, you look at what the Rams did, you look at how Fontenot has typically been more frugal and a little bit more selective with his free agency additions. And you're starting to see that maybe what they really want is the method that you suggested, which is to make a lot of picks, to have a lot of young guys on rookie contracts, filling out a lot of the roster, a few key free agents here and there, but mostly re-signing the guys that are key players for you and then letting the rest, you know, walk when needed, and then just replenishing the talent with the draft instead of relying on free agency, kind of the anti-Dimitroff approach, if you will. But I think that's a reasonable thing to do, and I think it's certainly a departure from what they've done in years past under Dimitroff, but they're getting to the point where they may have to out of necessity because, like you said, the salary cap's getting tighter. They've got all these guys that are going to be coming up for contracts, and, you know, you can't necessarily pay everyone, and, like, right now it's looking like that they will be able to probably keep their guys around because they've kind of staggered when they need to pay these guys. Obviously, A.J. Terrell is a big one that's coming up. You know, yep. Kyle Pitts, we'll see what kind of contract he'll be looking at after this year. But, you know, Drake London's probably going to be looking at a premium deal, and then Bijan eventually as well. So it's a good idea, I think, to start stocking the roster with a lot of young players, and not all of them are going to hit. But when you make so many picks, it sort of doesn't matter. Like, you know, some aren't going to work out, but some will. Some will work out great, and then you'll hopefully be able to have the depth that you need to build going forward. And we also know that Fontenot loves to trade those late round picks for veterans that he thinks can improve the team midseason or in the offseason or whatever. And I think he would like those extra picks, you know, potentially future picks for that reason too. Like, you know, trading sevens, trading sixths, whatever it might be to get, you know, they traded fifths last year for several guys. So, you know, I think that makes a lot of sense, basically, it's a very long-winded way of, yeah, agreeing. Yeah.
Well, you allow the chips to fall by themselves, right? If you're selecting players and only investing draft capital in them and not money up front, then if they don't turn out well, right, if you're drafting a lot of players, you're hoping that maybe even like a 40% hit rate, 50% hit rate, all right, well, if you're drafting 10 guys, five should hit, five don't, instead of paying all 10 of those guys on the free agency market where you're paying a premium and you're maybe, you know, paying a lot of guaranteed money now and all that stuff, like you would basically be able to say to the five who don't pan out, all right, like, thanks for your service. You're walking. We're not going to pay you those bigger contracts. And the five that do pay, all right, cool. Now we can work around you and figure out how to build it. So I think it's just you got to have balance, right? But if you're hitting on your Jesse Bateses and you're hopefully hitting on your Kirk Cousinses, and David Onyemata, and like, I've had no issues with their free agent signings under Terry Fontenot, because those are hitting, it allows you then, I think, to take a little bit more of a shotgun spray approach with your draft, which is probably the better way to go about such a flawed process.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, we'll see how it pans out, obviously, and if they do go this route. But I know, you know, Joe also mentions that the Ozzie Newsome model also tends to spend on lower market value positions like guard and safety, which is exactly what the Falcons have done. So, yep. You know, the chips are maybe falling into place for this to be a reality. We'll see if it does pan out, but I think it's certainly an interesting topic and something that I think we will see. And the Falcons,
if only Jim Harbaugh had come here,
if only Jim Harbaugh, man,
we'd be the Ravens South.
There you go. Yeah. You know, and a lot of people would have liked that. So, I think it's a really interesting conversation. And I do wonder where these picks will come in if they do end up making a trade. But, you know, at eight, it seems like the overwhelming favorite if they stay at eight will be to just take the edge rusher. Because I think if you look at the way this draft is sort of structured, I think that the talent at edge, it's there on day two, but it's a very different tier you're looking at once you get past the top three guys. These are Chop Robinson, who has that like star potential, but is very much a work in progress. And then you have a lot of guys that I think are like situational pass rushers or like specialist guys or like scheme specific guys, which is fine. But it's like, if you're looking for that potential edge one that the Falcons desperately need, you're probably going to have to take that guy in the top 15. And I do think that all three of the top guys, whether that be Dallas Turner, Laiatu Tulatu, or Jared Verse, they all have that kind of potential. It's just, what flavor do you prefer? And I know we talked about it a lot on Believe in Falcons, and we came to the consensus that Latu might be the one that they end up going with because of his technical ability, the fact that he's probably the most pro-ready of the bunch. He's maybe not as high ceiling as Dallas Turner, but he kind of closed the gap a little bit with his testing, you know, the one thing being the length, which, since he is technically advanced, that's something that he kind of works to overcome kind of naturally with his technique. But I'm curious, you know, we talked about it then. Is that still your sort of thought, that Latu is kind of your favorite of the bunch, or have you changed your mind at all since then?
He's still my personal favorite, but I spoke with our mutual friend, Aaron Freeman, on the show after you, because I wanted to have somebody come on who I knew felt a little bit differently. And I know that at one point Aaron was just as high on Latu as we were, and he's kind of faded a little bit since then. And so I wanted to kind of get his reasoning why. And basically his logic was that, looking at the post-collegiate season and the Senior Bowl and even the combine, even though Latu tested really well, mostly at the Senior Bowl, against kind of that cream of the crop players who are going to play in the NFL, he didn't feel that Latu had enough clubs in his bag, right? That he was too reliant on technique. As good as that technique is, he didn't have the just natural speed to threaten a tackle up the arch to that, or arc to then open up the inside. He didn't have the power to just, or the length to just push a tackle right back into the lap of the quarterback. And that at the NFL level, when you're going against some of these elite tackles, and even, I mean, just the very good tackles, right? A Jake Matthews, like, his technique is going to be far better than 99% of the college tackles or interior players that you play. Like, Latu has not seen a Chris Lindstrom in his college career. And that worried Aaron a little bit, just when the technique maybe gets diminished a little bit, what else do you have to rely on? I still like Latu because I think he offers so much versatility. I think he, you know, he can literally play outside to inside. Like, he can do everything. And I think you could line him up in the A-gap. And I would love to see him and Caden Ellis just like a Mike Zimmer defense, that double A-gap blitz, and just pressure the quarterback that way. Or you can put him out wide and let him rush kind of more traditionally. And my concerns about the speed and power aspect of his game, like, I don't think that they're that far off from where you need to be as an effective NFL player. And I think that, again, the reason I like him is because his technique should already be at an NFL level. So if you are drafting a player with a shorter timeline in mind, of the three edge rushers, Latu makes the most sense for me for that reason. Now, I do think that, like you said, Dallas Turner offers a lot of upside. And could he turn into, you know, a Von Miller type, right? And now there are very few Von Millers, and so I'm even hesitant to say something like that. But like that super speed off the edge, has that really quick twitch athleticism while he's moving forward and while he's putting pressure on you, almost like a Euro step ability. Yeah. And then Jared Verse is just like, if you were going to kind of design a pass rusher of the last 20 years, he would kind of look like that and play like that. The length, the power, the ability to transfer your speed into power and all of that. So I understand why people would have their choice or preference. But again, for the Falcons and where they are in their timeline and having just sped things up, I think Latu comes in and you can use him in a ton of different ways. So you could maximize the other players on your roster. You could have him on the field with Arnold Ebukadi and Lorenzo Carter and Grady Jarrett if you want. You could have him on the field with David Onyemata, Grady Jarrett, him, and then, you know, again, Lorenzo Carter off the other side or Arnold Ebukadi off the other side. So it's like the malleability coupled with his pro-ready game, in my opinion, makes him the pick for me.
Yeah, no, I think that's reasonable. And really, it's like, it's just whatever flavor you want. And a lot of it's also going to come down to how much confidence the coaching staff has in their ability to get Turner where he needs to be quickly. And like, that's, you know, that's a double-edged sword, because of course the coaching staff has confidence in their ability to get the star edge rusher to where they need it to be. So it's like, that's why these guys typically go early. These athletic marvels go super early because the coaching staff's like, oh, well, just let me get this guy in the room and I'll coach him up. And, you know, it sort of is what it is, right? I mean, whether they can or they can't, they will definitely say that they can. And that's why I won't be shocked if it is Turner. And I think the betting favorite probably should be Turner because of that.
Yeah.
And the main reason to me, like, I think like Latu did kind of close the gap in terms of athletic testing, but the length is the big thing. And that's what will cap Latu's ceiling more than anything else, is that lack of ideal length and his
and the medical
below
history.
Yes. The medicals, you know, like too. Yes. Yeah. That's true. It's very true. And, you know, the lack of length, like Latu is below average, whereas Dallas Turner is like well above average, like almost 35 inch arms. It's kind of nuts how much length he has at his height. So like, that could lead, I mean, if you look at the package of the traits and all that stuff, Dallas Turner's got that upside, so it could be Dallas Turner. But if they're looking for that immediate impact guy, I think it could be Latu. Or maybe they want the guy that's in between, which is Jared Verse. You know, I don't know. But,
have you done any digging into how much arm length matters for, like, the top tier? Like, how many of the top tier defensive ends in the NFL and where they ranked on like mock draftable in the percentile of arm length when they came out? I personally haven't, so I don't want to speak to that, but that would definitely be, I think, worth digging into, because again, I think you can mitigate some of that by his maneuverability around the defensive line. However, you don't want to draft a guy when you need an edge rusher and be like, well, he's only pretty much playing between the guards because we need him just like that's where his arm length allows him to play. Like, that would be a really bad investment. However, I would be curious to see, is this something we only all talk about during the draft time? And then you get a guy and it's like, no, TJ Watt actually had 30 percentile arm length and he's totally fine. You know, I'm just picking a name out there, but you know, obviously I don't think Myles Garrett has super short arms, but there's got to be some pass rushers who have done well for themselves who also, you know, aren't killing it in the arm length department. You know, they're not Michael Jordan in Space Jam.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know, and someone brought it up in the chat. Gabe Rogers said, you know, Michael Parsons is a great example. He has extremely short arms. Michael Parsons,
very similar type of, again, moves all over the place, plays with his hair on fire, just as a Tasmanian devil, which is why, again, I really like Latu.
Yeah, yeah, and Michael Parsons is kind of a unique player So that's definitely part of that. He more closely resembles like off-ball linebackers in a lot of his measurements, honestly. But
yeah,
you know,
Anthony Barr was a guy that I kept thinking a lot about when I was watching Latsu's film.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And so you can win in a lot of different ways. And having shorter arms isn't a death sentence. Like, it's not like you can't possibly be a good player without long arms. But I do think arm length is one of the higher correlated things in terms of success. It's not, you know, I don't know the stats. Like, I know the guys over at Reception Perception did like a deep dive into receivers and which traits are or aren't like important for receivers. And like, interestingly enough, like height was not at all correlated with receiver success. And I know that's like a big thing that a lot of people want their big receivers. And they're like, yeah, receiver size really has like no correlation whatsoever in terms of height. You know, weight, obviously, if you get to the super low end, that is a big problem. But height wise really didn't correlate. That I found interesting. With, I haven't seen that analysis for like edge rushers, but the Falcons obviously do care a lot about length. They have made a point of drafting length pretty much with everyone they've brought in. I mean, you look up and down at the type of guys they brought in, you know, Ade Ogundeji, going back to him, big arms. I think Taquan Graham had long arms. I think obviously Zach Harrison has just like ridiculous arm length. Even Arnold Ebikadie,
he's
like,
long everywhere, man.
Yeah, yeah. He is just, he is a big man. You know, Arnold Ebikadie, like he, even though he's only like 6'2", over 34 inch arms, very similar build, honestly, to Dallas Turner. So, you know, they have a type and they've tended to favor the arm length. Now that was with a different defensive coordinator. Well, two different defensive coordinators in Dean Pease and in Ryan Nielsen.
Ryan
but
Nielsen.
Again, like it's the same scouting staff and the same GM. So like, how different is it really? You know, it seems like they like length. So if they like length, I can tell you who they're going to draft. It's Dallas Turner, because he's got the length. But it's definitely going to be interesting to see the direction they go with those edge guys, if that is the direction they do go, because it's like, this will be a test. Like, how is it really like win now at all costs, or is it win now, but like, you know, is 2024 when they're trying to win, or is it 2025? Because if it's 2025, you could probably afford to take the Dallas Turner and just be like, okay, he's probably going to have a little bit of a hot and cold rookie season. We're fine with that. But 2025, we think he'll be ready to go and be our edge one and all that sort of stuff. It's very interesting to see how it unfolds. And I think that's seeing who they go with, if edge is where they go, which I think it will be unless they do trade down significantly.
And even if they do, I mean, like, edge is still probably the pick, because
it's probably still,
it's about like John Abraham left this team 12 years ago. They haven't had anybody worth a damn since John Abraham, you know, including Vic Beasley's one good season, because we all know that was a little bit more smoke and mirrors than it probably was legitimate. So
yeah,
I think that again, I just keep in the back of my mind, I'm like, I could really see them falling in love with Terry and Arnold, because I do think they really like Devin Witherspoon. And it's interesting that they haven't made any, you know, waves on the AJ Terrell front. Now, that could all come out in training camp, and, you know, the agent may want to string this out. I don't know who else in the cornerback tier is kind of like up for their extension right now. And this could all be a waiting game until the first domino falls. However, it's just, again, something rattling around in the back of my mind, because for whatever reason, this franchise is very averse to just drafting an edge rusher in the top 12.
We have a lot of proof that they don't draft edge rushers high. And
the ghost
and
of Jamal Anderson hangs over this organization.
Yep. And maybe that's just coincidence with this regime trying to get the offense right. And it is a new coaching staff now. So, you know, we'll see if that changes or not. But Noah C says, with the $5, do we really actually want to draft a defensive end when they just ban tackling? That's a good point, Noah. You know, if we can't tackle, you know, what's the point of even having a defense? Maybe we should just spend all the money on offense and just have Will and Iron out there, and just we'll cover some space. I'll cover some grass. I can't guarantee I'll make any tackles, but I will go cover some grass for you. You can pay me the vet men. Yeah. I'll just go out there and get pancaked by a wide receiver for sure. So, you know, I know my role. It's just to fill space. But
honestly, Arthur Smith was one training camp away from calling you and Adnan out there to at least field a punt or something. It was going to happen this year. I was so confident.
Yep. No, I mean, I I'm open. When the media combine comes, I'll be ready. You know, hopefully we won't tear anything. Yeah.
Line it up. Do the 20-yard shuttle. I will be front row buying tickets for that bad boy. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Who would win in the – who would get your vote in the media combine?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I know, like if we had Jordan there, like, Jordan's a former NFL player. Or, like, you know, he was in training camp. So, I mean, Jordan Watkins, like, I mean, I would put my money on him in, like, most of the jumps and, like, everything because this man we know is an athlete. But I haven't seen the new ESPN guy yet, Mark. You know, Gina speaks highly of him. So maybe – and he covers combat sports. So, you know, maybe he could be really in shape. I mean, I don't know. You know, I feel like I'd be like firmly in the middle. I did run a 4.7, back in the day, probably more like a 4.9 now, but you know, if I got that start, right. You know, if I got my start correct, which I haven't done in a long time, you know, maybe I could hit a 4.8, but, firmly in the middle, I'll go for average, for me. And I'd be satisfied with that, but
I like the humility.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, it depends on who shows up too. Like if it's just me and D-Led, then I'll feel pretty confident about my chances. Yeah. You know, no offense to D-Led, but
if he's showing up, he's showing up in the bow tie.
He's got the technical skills. Like, I mean, he's got that veteran savvy. But if we're just doing athletic testing, I think I got a pretty good shot there. So, let's see. Where else were we gonna go here? Yeah. So we talked about 8th overall. And probably going edge rusher. Do you think any of the signings that they made, you know, Antonio Hamilton, we got Kevin King in here. They added like a depth edge rusher and James Smith Williams. You know, any of these guys sort of move the needle for you at all in terms of their potential draft plans?
No, they don't. They don't move the needle for me. I don't think they should move the needle for the organization either. You know, if you look at Terry Fondo's track record going back to New Orleans, right? Like, If they're going to miss, they're not going to miss big. And that is kind of what these moves are very indicative of to me. Kevin King is by far the most interesting one because obviously a former second round pick, not just a second round pick, like the 33rd overall pick in that draft. So, you know, a fringe first rounder. Plate was a starter for a long time there in Green Bay with you know, three members of the coaching staff, most notably Jerry Gray. And that is, if it weren't for his injury history, which obviously like that's why he is available and why, well, you know, I'm not going to say why Green Bay moved on, but because he was inconsistent. He had some pretty high highs playing opposite of Jaire Alexander, but he would also just go missing in games. And as a corner, like can't really afford to do that. So this is very clearly like a, hey, if he works out, maybe we've got like a good third outside corner. Maybe the upside is there for him to develop. But like at this point, if that's your plan for the number two corner, I'm going to need a little bit more from you, you know, honestly. But as a just kind of, all right, like, let's see what this turns into. And again, the familiarity with the coaching staff, which has been a very important thing for the Falcons under Terry Fontenot, is knowing what you're buying. And it's a reason why they've brought in a lot of people who have been connected to various members of the coaching staff throughout the last 3 years, because you do not want to buy on the hype. You do not want to buy a player who on the field may be awesome, but in the locker room is absolutely a negative. They want to add to this team in every conceivable way. And so at the very least, I would expect Kevin King, even if he never plays a meaningful down for the Falcons, and even if he doesn't make it out of training camp, I would expect in these coming months, him to have a pretty positive net impact on the Falcons overall, as they are kind of, you know, rejiggering their defense in whatever way they decide to do that. Clearly they feel that he is a voice that could add some value. And again, the upside is that maybe everything is healthy. Maybe he avoids the season ending injury, which he has unfortunately been unable to avoid over the last couple of years. And he gets back to playing like a second rounder. And then you're kind of like, cool, we got him relatively cheaply. And again, we addressed another need for us. The other two, Antonio Hamilton it's interesting. Like, he was 30 last year. That was kind of his first big year, or at least he started the most games and kind of had the most impact. And, you know, I think that he's more than likely just going to be a veteran depth piece here. And I'm a fan of just having numbers in the secondary. If you go into training camp with like 10, 11, 12 guys in the secondary, I'm cool with that because people are going to get hurt. And again, I'm a big, like, let the chips fall where they may type of person. And so if you're going to just get a lot of guys out there competing, move somebody inside a nickel, move somebody back to safety, see where they work best and how they work best with each other. And so having somebody who does have starting experience, who is kind of a veteran, who's been on a number of different teams and has a strong background from a lot of these different coaches and schemes, if they're going to be versatile like I expect them to be, that should benefit them. And then James Smith, is it Washington or Williams?
James Smith Washington. Williams, I think.
Williams. I don't know why I just confused myself there. But I'm curious if he is going to be a, kind of a stand-up guy on the outside, because his body type, I think, is more of that 4-eye, like 5 technique, if that's how they want to play it. Although I do still wonder if this is going to be a true 3-4 look, or if they're going to kind of do some hybrid looks. And again, most of the time you're a nickel anyway. So he's probably just a rotational hand in the dirt type of player. The Falcons, I feel like, have a ton of those guys right now, which is part of the reason why when you mentioned the second round edge rushers in this draft, the last thing this team needs is another like situational upside, but like he can only do a few things edge defender, right? Yeah. They have so many of those, I feel like, that, and I'm not saying that that's what James Smith Williams is, but it's, again, for that reason, not anything that I'm sitting here kind of looking at as anything that moves the needle in a meaningful way for this franchise. So again, I like that they're doing something, and I think that they're adding camp depth with the potential for regular season depth and maybe even a little bit more than that. But if ultimately this doesn't pan out, I don't think it changes really all that much. And I don't think it should change the way that they approach the draft.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're interesting. I think Antonio Hamilton has a good chance to make the roster as like the CB4 or 5, just because he's got the experience, right? But you know, and that obviously depends on who they draft and how many guys, but right now I assume the plan is that the plan is probably to have Clark Phillips start opposite Terrell. I think that he's a better fit in the zone anyway. So I think, you know, that's probably right now who I would pencil in. Now, we know Jerry Gray is like obsessed with Mike Hughes, UCF legend. But I will also point out that Clark Phillips changed his number to 22, which, as we know, is an elite cornerback number. So, you know, that is also working in his favor. So we have that to lean on.
It's an optics thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 34 was okay, but like, you know, I think 22, the aesthetic is going
to
be strong.
Yeah.
You know, look,
it's
good,
like when
good.
I show up to a party in my black turtleneck and I'm just looking slim. Yep. Yeah. It makes the biceps pop a little bit.
Exactly.
That's exactly what he's doing. Yeah.
It's exactly right. So, you know, he's got the confidence of that great number now. And I think that'll definitely boost him into that starting role that we all know he's capable of achieving. But I do think he's just a better fit for the zone heavy scheme that they're likely to run than he was for that man heavy scheme. So, you know, they could be like fairly confident in that working out. You know, I think Phillips obviously had an up and down start, and he doesn't have the ideal size for the outside, but I thought he played well, all things considered. And then Kevin King is kind of the exact opposite of Clark Phillips, where like he's huge and very athletic, but hasn't really proven it much outside of one great season. He did have one very good season, no doubt about that. But other than that, the injuries and everything, and I agree with you that I think it's hard to count on much from Kevin King. I wouldn't necessarily pencil him in like a roster projection at this point. Maybe if we like made the roster projection today with like no draft picks added, he'd probably be in there, because there's only like eight corners on the entire
roster. Yeah, it was like, so like necessity, yeah, okay. Probably.
Okay, probably. Yeah, he can make it, you know. But I think that, you know, we'll have to see what else they add and how that affects things. But at this point, I agree with you. I don't think that these additions really like move the needle for the draft, especially at the top. Because I don't think any of these guys are really like threatening for starting jobs in like a serious way. I mean, maybe Kevin King works out or whatever, but it, you know, I don't think it's a real I don't think it's something that I would spend too much time obsessing over at this stage of the offseason.
Would you rather have Terry and Arnold or Kevin King? Terry and Arnold. Would you rather have Cooper DeJean? Cooper DeJean. Like, you could play that game with like probably five or six or seven corners in this draft before you get to somebody where I'm like, eh, okay, maybe that guy doesn't get drafted because they have Kevin King here.
Yeah. Nope. That's a, you know, definitely like day three, everything's on the table, but we all know most guys just like to, you know, most teams, especially this team, I think they just draft guys they like late. They don't even care about the roster. They're just like, we like this guy. We're just going to add him. You know, we'll see what happens. And I think people get really mad. They're like, oh, why didn't they, we needed X position. Why didn't we take that in the seventh round? Because these seventh rounders are literally just priority UDFA. So, like, if you think this seventh rounder is going to, like, I mean, like, to their credit, like, DeMarco Helms, great job. He definitely did contribute in a big way. But, like, for the most part, these you're hoping these guys make your roster. Like, you're not hoping they're filling some massive need on your depth chart. It's like, we're going to hope this guy makes the roster, and then we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I mean, I think the other thing to note is, like, on day two, where the strength of the class is, and, you know, I we talked about it at the top, like, I think the edge group becomes more, like, specialized in that sort of day two range. I don't, like, love a lot of the guys there. I mean, I think if you get into that, like, third round range, there's some interesting guys, like, you know,
maybe
Gabe
that's
Murphy.
Where the value is a little bit better if you're gonna make a bet. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, like, they met with Marshawn Nyland, who I like. He's kind of a weird fit for a 3-4, though. Like, I don't really know exactly how that's going to work. He is really athletic, so maybe they want him to drop
a lot
weight.
Of these visits, though, are some can be smoke, some can be just like, hey, we're going to kind of keep tabs on you. Yeah. You know, maybe they feel like the Saints could go after Nyland, and they're just like, we want to know what this kid's about in case we have to play him or something, you know, like, that happens all the time. And these guys are all, like, Terry Fontenot will be the first to tell you that they have a book on every player in this league, and like, that's kind of their job. So if they already have a pretty good idea of the guys they're going to target, and they don't need these 30, and both, like, you know, 30 is not a lot, but you don't necessarily need all 30, then you do have some wiggle room there if you just want to get a book on a player who maybe you don't have a big Rolodex on already.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting that these visits, like, you're exactly right. They're not necessarily like, we're going to draft this guy. It's like, we want to know more about this guy. And it might be guys that it's either guys that they want the league to, like, publicly know they're interested in. Like, they want to put it out there that they're
interested. Or think that they're interested in. Yeah,
exactly. Or they just want to get more information on these guys because they didn't have time to talk to them at the combine or wherever. Or maybe they just want to get more information and they really are interested. That's the whole thing. It's pretty hard to tell, but you know, whichever answer it is, they're going to visit with probably all 30 guys, and they're probably only, they might draft like one, you know, of the 30. Like, yeah, but usually the Senior Bowl is the best way to predict who the Falcons draft historically.
Yeah.
So
historically,
Marshawn Nyland was at the Senior Bowl. So, you know, that could Quinyon Mitchell, Laiatu Latu, you know, all Senior Bowl guys. So, definitely ones to keep an eye on. But yeah, I think corner and safety in particular are pretty strong on day two, and wide receiver too. Like, so, you know, based on, you know, what we talked about, oh, well, edge is strong at the top, but it kind of falls off and these other positions are good. It all seems to be lining up. It's like, just take the edge with the first pick and then go fill these other needs with your three day two picks. You know, and sort of see, and if they do a trade down, that could potentially open them up to like a small trade up, like what Fontenot has done in the past, like in the second round or whatever, if they're trying to maneuver for a specific player they want, like a specific receiver or a specific corner or whatever. Like, TJ Tampa, I think, is like a great fit for this scheme. But there's a chance he could go before 43. So if they're like worried about him going, they could trade up into the earlier part of the second round, send like a fourth round pick, and, you know, then make sure they get their guy and still have a bunch of picks. So it's always nice to have the flexibility.
Are you sold on the fact that, or do you believe the Falcons are done addressing quarterback? Or do you, because I, the more that I think about that second round pick, and again, even the potential of maybe trading back up, if Michael Penix is still there, and I know, like, he's been comped at times to Kirk Cousins, and I just think that, I know he's older, but if you do want to have a player that you kind of have waiting in the wings, maybe if he is there and slips into the second round because of his medical concerns, like, I feel better about taking him and then letting him sit and learn and kind of work under Kirk Cousins as you get a little bit more distance from those injuries, as you kind of work him into an NFL weight room and get him acclimated slowly and almost go like the Jordan Love approach. Like, is that off the table for you at this point? Because they should just add players who will actually play in 2024, as opposed to a quarterback who is ostensibly sitting for at least 2 years. Where do you fall on all of that? And is there any guy who, outside of the top four, you know, if Penix is there, if Rattler's there, if Bo Nix is there, like, is there anybody that you'd be like, yeah, I really would want the Falcons to take him at like 43?
For me personally, no. I'm personally not interested. The team very well could be, but I just don't, like, I don't think it lines up. I don't think Bo Nix or Michael Penix, they line up with the Falcons timeline at all, because Cousins is going to be here for 2 years. And by the time that's over, Penix will be like 26, 27 years old before he's even taking his first starting steps. Bo Nix, the same thing. So they're not the right developmental quarterbacks for them. Bo Nix is not a developmental quarterback. Bo Nix is like a ready-made backup, low ceiling, high floor guy. So if they want like a good backup, then they could go for Bo Nix. But Penix is like a developmental quarterback who's already 24 years old, and it's like, that's a tough timeline. And it's all, and the medicals and all that. I just think that they do seem interested, for whatever that's worth. I think that may have to do more with posturing at with the eighth pick, because I think there's like a legit chance that we have six quarterbacks go in the first round. Now, it's, I don't think that's like, I don't know that these quarterbacks are first round caliber, but it's like, that doesn't matter, because like, if the Broncos do not take a quarterback at 12, they have no picks until the third round. So like, they're not getting one, period. So they kind of are like in that weird spot where they kind of have to take one or not. So they're either tanking or they're taking Bo Nix or Michael Penix. It's kind of the only options they have. So maybe they are tanking, but that doesn't, Sean Payton hates tanking. The Saints put off tanking and just resetting for like 20 years, and they're still doing it at this point. So, you know, but I do think like they are going to draft a quarterback more than likely. It'll be one of the other ones, I think. Like Spencer Rattler, they've also seemed to be putting some interest out in him. But again, he's also a 24, so it's not like his developmental timeline is that much better. You know, Michael Pratt, I know some people are interested in him. You know, to me, it's like, I just like, I think they're going to take one of these guys and just see if they can strike gold. But it's like more than likely you're going to be getting like a backup. You know, if you take Michael Pratt, you're probably getting a backup. Jordan Travis, he's interesting, but he's got a lot of work to do. Or you could just go for like a Joe Milton and be like, we're just going to like throw a huge dart and see if he can turn anything. But again, he's also 24. Jordan Travis, 24. Joe Milton, 24. Like these are,
oh, it's
not,
literally
like,
JJ McCarthy or bust for you, Kevin.
Yeah, it's, I only like young quarterbacks. That's
just quarterbacks and diapers.
Actually, Drake May is the one I want. But
okay,
yeah, it's not like they're not going to be like ancient old men when the Falcons.
No, I get
it. So it's not that big a deal. But you know, I think it's more of a thing for Penix with the medicals. For the other guys, it's maybe a little bit less. But you know, with Penix, I do like you obviously love the arm. Like it's incredible, but he doesn't throw the middle of the field, and he doesn't handle pressure. And it's like, he's already 24 years old and he doesn't do these things.
Right.
How much of this is coachable, you know, and he's lost a lot of time due to injury. So it's like that could be part of it as well, but it's a little concerning to me. And I know, you know, Derek Klassen, who I've had on a couple times, is very concerned about Penix's NFL projection, because again, if you don't throw the middle of the field and you don't handle pressure well, that's typically a recipe for a disaster in the NFL. Where you just, that those are some things that are very problematic, and typically guys don't get a lot better at it at the NFL level when the defenses are much better.
Yeah.
So, but I do like Penix, like otherwise. And I think Bo Nix is like interesting, but again, I think you're probably like, if you're taking him, you're more taking him as like a high end backup. I don't, maybe some teams view him as a potential starter. But
yeah,
he's
like Gardner Minshew. He's Taylor Heineke. Yeah. Like, I mean, that probably is like his career projection, where if you need him to step in and maybe your starter gets hurt and he's got to play eight games in a season, he could conceivably put a team on his shoulders and get him into the playoffs and win four of the last six games, and you see the team kind of roll in and everybody's like, man, Bo Nix, all right, like, this is great, we love this guy, we don't need to re-sign our starter. But then you make him your starter and you start to see the limitations, right? Yeah. So that's probably the dance he's going to end up playing throughout his NFL career.
Yeah. And it's like, I think Bo Nix is like better than Minshew and like better than Heinicke, but like how much better, you know? And it's like, is he ever going to be a guy that you're not looking to replace? Like I feel like he's unfortunately one of those guys that's just like not quite good enough to like make him a long-term starter. Like he might be Daniel Jones, you know?
Or Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, exactly.
Is like the like different type of player, obviously, but like that type of just journeyman career where he comes in and he's just your interim substitute teacher for a year or two.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you're, as soon as you sign him, you're ready to draft his replacement. Yeah. Unfortunately, because I like Bo Nix a lot as a, as I think a prospect.
I think he's going to be like an 8 to 10 year easily NFL player. Like he's not going to be a bust. He's just like, I think it's just one of those sad things where it's like, he's not flashy enough, doesn't have enough traits, and he's not super young either. So like teams will just be like, well, you're going to be our backup. And then he'll probably get into some games and play well, but it's like, he's never going to quite be.
You're
like,
going to hear camp stories about like coaches raving about Bo Nix like this season, but then you'll get him in training camp. And I wouldn't even be shocked if he has like a couple good training camp or preseason games, but it's like, get him out there in week 7. Right. And he does have Myles Garrett kind of bearing down on him. What does he do?
Right.
That's where you got to make your money.
Yeah. It's just the NFL. Like you have to have someone who will be a difference maker. And I think he is very much a game manager. And like you can win with a game manager if you have an elite team, but like most teams just don't have the luxury of just being able to sort of be like, okay, we can have the 20th best QB. And maybe Nix could be the 20th best QB. And that's absolutely probably worth a, you know, second round pick easily.
If Falcons had the 20th best QB last year,
we would have made the
playoffs. They're a playoff team.
I think they would have made the playoffs with Bo Nix last year. Like, I'm not hating on Bo Nix whatsoever, but it's just one of those things where he's probably not going to be available at their second round pick. And also, like, if you're looking for like a developmental starter, that's not really the fit either. But maybe they just want a good backup. So maybe that is.
But if they wanted that, Taylor Heinicke wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Well, oh, God. No.
No, I mean, you get what I mean. Damn. Like, yes, it didn't feel like that.
No, I was trying to like play it like you were dunking on Taylor Heinicke. But, you know, we all know. I would never dunk on Heinicke. He's
grew up right
nice
down
man.
The street from here. He's going to come over here. And
yeah, he's watching right now. I'm sure he's getting his shoes on right now. His ass kicking boots. But no, love Taylor
like
Heinicke.
A Heineken over my head.
Yeah. And props to Taylor Heinicke for taking that pay cut. You know, I'm sure that was not, you know, enjoyable for him, but I'm happy he's still here. I mean, I know a lot of people soured on him after last year, but I still think he's a good backup quarterback. Yeah. So I'm happy he's still in Atlanta. And the salary is much, much more palatable now. So good for him for sticking around. Appreciate that, Taylor. Not that you had much choice in the matter if you wanted to stick around. Not that you have much choice. I appreciate it anyway. But I think it'll be interesting to see where they go on day two. I mean, I know to me it's like safety, corner, wide receiver in some order if they get an edge rusher and maybe some kind of wild card depending on who's there. But how big of a thing is safety for you? Like, do you care about the second safety? Are you fine with DeMarco Helms, you know?
I think if it's the right player, and to be honest, I haven't dug into the safety position too much just because it's not one of the kind of like key needs for this team. And that's usually where I start when I'm doing my draft prep. So I haven't, you know, really looked into like Cameron Kitchens, for example, or, those guys, but I like what DeMarco Helms brought last year. I do think he's a little bit more kind of like Jalen Hawkins-y as opposed to that truly versatile, comes down into the box. Like, I think for this defense, Richie Grant does actually fit the mold. Now, I know that Richie Grant has had a lot of his own issues over the years, and I think a lot of people are clamoring for his replacement. And if that is DeMarco Helms, it's just clearly purely a fit thing for me with Helms, because I like what he brings to the table. But again, I think in this defense, you're going to have that two corners who are very comfortable rolling up, rolling back, going into the nickel, going into the slot and covering those guys, like doing a little bit of everything. Obviously Jesse Bates can do that. I do think he is at his best operating from that middle of the field, and whether that is coming forward as a robber or going deep into that deep center field position, but kind of stationing there. So I think the like Tyrann Mathieu would be like an ideal type of number two corner to, or safety to have in this defense. I know I'm picking a player who is not a Hall of Famer, but like that kind of like tier or two below when all is said and done. So that, again, type of player, which is what Richie Grant was supposed to be, right? So I'm really curious. I'm curious to see if Raheem Morris gets his hands on him a little bit. Obviously, he's going to have to work with the whole team, and Jerry Gray is still there, and so there are familiar faces. But I'm curious to see if Richie Grant does have anything left to offer this team and if there is some kind of bounce-back season in store for him. But no, I think I would rather personally see the Falcons go grab a receiver in like the second round, or honestly, we were talking about the edge rushers when you and I did our mock, like we went with Darius Robinson because we felt we could kind of slide him inside. That's where, if we're looking at defensive line in the second round, third round, I start to gravitate a little bit more to those kind of like interior closer to the ball bodies, because I think that that's when the top guys of that group will start to go. And you know, that's where if you are looking at a post David Onyemata, post Grady Jarrett world, getting a true understudy to learn from those two guys who then next year, the year after, could really step in a full-time starting role. You know, that the second round pick, you're hoping to get a like starter as well. But we have seen the Falcons recently in recent years, you know, like invest that pick in somebody who takes a little bit of time or is not a pure like, oh, they drafted him, we know exactly where we're going to pencil him in and no worries, no sweat, like he's a day one starter. So again, I would prefer receiver. If Ladd McConkey is there, I'm trading back up into the first end of the first round to go get Ladd McConkey at 32. Like, that's my guy, freaking love him. I think he's going to be an awesome pro. But if he's not there, I really like Roman Wilson. You know, like I really think that there's going to be that archetype of receiver, just a can get separation, can get open, can do stuff with the ball in his hands. Get that guy on my team.
Yeah, no, I like that idea too. And you know, depending on who's there, like they could really use that like elite slot presence. And you know, I think they could go a couple different ways. We talked about it on Believe in Falcons. Like, they could go for more of that outside guy, like a Brendan Rice, and that might give them the flexibility to move Drake London into that slot role more. Or maybe they play Kyle Pitts in that big slot role. They keep London outside. They go for more of that Z flanker type thing. Or maybe they go for that slot specialist like a Ladd McConkey. You know, keep London outside, do some interesting things with Pitts.
Keep those big bodies outside. Yeah. You know, I get what you're saying. Bring him in tight and all that. But
yeah,
this isn't Arthur Smith ball anymore. You know, we don't need everybody between the hashes.
I need
we
you to
keep
block
some dudes.
Can you block? Yeah. That's
exactly,
all I
right?
care about.
You know,
yeah,
they've got enough blocking receivers. I need some receivers who can get some separation and get downfield.
Please, can we get receivers that can actually play a receiver, you know, and not just block? That would be ideal. Yeah, I mean, Josh Gillum saying, can Ladd truly take hits over the middle of the field? Yeah, it's 5'11", 180. I mean, that's NFL size, man. Did you see Julian Edelman get like just wrecked over and over? Like, I mean, you know, these receivers, man, some of these guys just know how to take hits. And that's just how it is. Malik Washington is another good example of a smaller receiver, but they're built compact and dense, and they just know how to take hits, and they don't miss a lot of time. That's kind of how,
and they're also
is, you know,
taking less of those, like, absolute, you know, you'll see one or two of those a game, but that's way different than 15, 18 of those a game. And oftentimes, you know, like you were saying, these middle of the field specialists understand how to operate in the middle of the field. And also these offenses and route designs, I think, are a little bit more advanced than they were back in the 70s and 80s, when you just had like two man routes and one guy was going deep and one guy was just going over the middle of the field. And the defense knew that, and the fans knew that, and everybody knew that. This is a little bit more, not saying that they're not going to take hits. Yeah. And obviously Ladd McConkey has had some injury history.
Yes.
But that's not enough to scare me off, given all that I think he would bring to the table.
Yeah. It's funny. I just had to shout this out. Like, not anyone in the chat here, but I did have someone message me saying like, oh, well, Ladd McConkey is just Hunter Renfrow and we could just get him in free agency for like nothing. So like,
I would take Hunter Renfrow on this team.
I would take Hunter Renfrow. Hunter Renfrow ran a 4.6. Ladd McConkey ran in the 4.3s. Okay. And Hunter Renfrow tested out very poorly. Ladd McConkey is like a 9.3 RAS. He has elite times. He ran like a 6.723 cone. Like,
you love RAS, man.
I'm just saying, like, it. There's a reason. There's, yes, Kevin RAS Knight. That'll be my new initials. Like, I'm just saying, there's a reason why one of these guys is going to be a second or first round pick, and the other one was like a fifth rounder, and they were both productive in college, but one of them's an elite athlete, and one of them's not, and that's why Ladd McConkey is getting drafted high, you know, it's because he's also a speed demon, not just a route runner, which Hunter Renfrow, to his credit, has had some excellent NFL seasons despite his athletic and size limitations. You know, I just keep wondering
who is going to be that jet sweep player in this offense.
It's Rondale
because
Moore,
the Rams, right? I think that, yes, I agree with you. Like, that is who is currently that type. But again, if Rondale Moore doesn't pan out, or let's just say, God forbid, he gets hurt, you know, like, then what is your plan B? Because I do think that's an element of this offense that is kind of essential, and that they don't have that many players. Like, they really, it is just kind of Rondale Moore, unless you want like Avery Williams in that role, if he is your emergency plan there. But again, I don't feel great about that. If you're telling me that's the plan, right, I need you to tell me something different.
Please so, tell me something else.
Yeah. So that's sure.
Ray McLeod. There we go. Yeah.
Yeah. They could get that guy in like the fifth round or the sixth round. See Puka. But like, I just think there are a lot of really good players.
Yeah.
Pearsall is another one. Like, there are those players right there in that second round. One of them could be available, and the upside is not just to fill that role, but to do a lot of other things. And that's where you get like a Taylor Gabriel plus type of player in this offense.
Yeah.
Then I really think you're adding a different dimension to what we've had previously.
Yeah, I agree. I think they really need to come away with at least one right receiver from this class. It's just, the class is too good to not get one. And maybe even two, like we did in our draft, right? We got Malik Washington. Yeah.
Rice first.
Yeah, it was
and
Rice
did,
and then
Washington.
Malik Washington. So we got the slot guy and the outside guy to just, and again, like I think they could do that. I think they could also like wait and do like a day three receiver and you know, a second rounder or something like that. Like,
Washington could totally be there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, we'll see what happens, but I think they definitely should at least add one receiver from this class. I think it would be really, they didn't do it last year when they desperately needed to. They definitely still need to add a receiver this year as well. All right, let me get to a couple of these donations before we sign off here. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. We got Corey with the $2 giving us his early mock draft here. He's going with Dallas Turner early. Ennis Rickstraw Jr., the corner at 43. His stock has kind of cooled off after his athletic testing, unfortunately for him. But I still think he's a good player, probably still worth 43.
I like Rickstraw.
Yeah, his tape
Sandra
is good.
Sandra Still's my guy.
Oh, I love Sandra. If we didn't have a slot corner, like if I didn't love D. Alford so much, I would be all over Mikey Sandra Still, man. That dude is that dude has some of the most fun tape at corner. Like he is just hair on fire type of guy. Ricky Pearsall is his receiver of choice. And the third, Bo Braid, the safety at 79. That's earlier than I usually see Bo, but I know he's got some fans. Mason Smith, the defensive tackle from LSU, 109. Theo Johnson, a tight end. There we go. And Joe Melton, getting that developmental quarterback. And then Logan Lee, the defensive tackle. I actually don't know Logan Lee, but thanks for sharing your mock, Corey. Appreciate you. We got George pounding the table for Joe Alt again. He says, the Falcons pass on him, I'm going to lose my shit. I know, George. I know. You know, you got to trust the team because, you know, I know you're a big Evan Neal guy. Remember the Evan Neal thing? I'm not saying Joe Alt is Evan Neal. I'm much more confident than Joe Alt than Evan Neal, actually. But he says, you know, I know he doesn't conventionally fit, but you can make his talent work. It's a good problem to have, 100 million reasons. I honestly don't think that Joe Alt is a crazy idea because I think you're probably going to be moving on from Caleb McGarry next year for salary reasons and, like, Jake Matthews, you probably got maybe two, maybe three more years before you're looking to potentially move on from Jake or to restructure. And you're looking for a successor, basically. So yeah. I think it's not crazy to want Joe Alt. I certainly think he's worthy of the eighth pick without question. It's just like,
he could actually be like the best player available on the
yes.
Well, Brock Bowers probably would be the best player, but like if in realistic, like we're going to take a guy at eight, he probably is like the eighth best player on a lot of people's boards.
Yeah.
Like,
so I mean, I
from that standpoint, it does make perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think it's crazy. I just think it's not necessarily the cleanest fit, but like, yeah. And Joe Schmo brings up a good point. Like, would Alt start over Caleb McGarry? Like, maybe. He hasn't played much right tackle. But
yeah,
you
know, that's the only concern, right?
It's not super easy, but like, you know, I mean, it's not impossible either. And like, it's never a bad thing
like
to get
with your opposite hand, Kevin.
I know it's just awkward. You know,
that's what they say.
It could be a very messy situation. So you don't want
to
get
try it at home, ladies and gentlemen.
That's what a bidet is for. I don't know which player would be the bidet of the NFL. I don't know. We'll workshop that one.
Yeah, what would be Olu Fashanu?
Yeah,
the bidet of
he's the bidet. He's just so versatile. You know, very clean player. But I do like Joe Wall, and I have no problem taking him at eight. It's just, will they do it? I don't know. And I also I think if the Titans don't take him, they're completely foolish, to be honest. So even up, we'll see. But and then George says, okay, I'm gonna be honest, the pick is gonna be Brock Bowers, actually. Oh yeah, okay, George, just go back to your UGA homerism here. Also says we should trade a six for Stakvarius. Yeah, okay, now I know you're trolling, George. Get that 2025 Super Bowl parade ready to go. Yeah. Okay, George. Yeah. Brock Bowers is very good. But Arthur Smith is gone. So all hope of Brock Bowers coming to Atlanta left with him, unfortunately. So, yeah. You know, RIP the Brock Bowers dream for George. But I do appreciate everyone for hanging out. Appreciate Will for coming on with us. He's at Will McFadden. Host of the Believe in Falcons podcast, also working on, I know, the mailbag over at the Falcoholic. Anything else, Will, you want to plug before we sign off tonight?
No, the mailbag will be up tomorrow at some point. Got to log off here and go work on that. So it's
type,
just
type,
Falcons
type.
Nonstop, man, for this this evening. But no, yeah, you can go follow me at Will McFadden. Check out Believe in Falcons YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. I believe I will have Jordan Rodrigue of The Athletic coming on for the next episode to chat with me just about Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris, and kind of like what she learned about those two guys. Obviously, we know a little bit more about Raheem Morris than we do Zach Robinson, so we'll probably talk a lot about Zach. So if you want to know more about Atlanta's new offensive coordinator, then I would highly recommend checking out that episode, which will probably be coming out Monday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one, getting that intel there. And Jordan Marie is great as well. So looking forward to that one. Yeah, guys, definitely check that out. Check out Will. Follow him at Will McFadden. Check out the Believe in Falcons podcast also, because we all know I can't keep up with your content demands. Maybe Aaron Freeman's the only one that can. So if you're looking for, you know, the other show on the Believe podcast network, because we're Believe buddies, check out Believe in Falcons. You know, we do talk about some of the same stuff, and we talk to each other sometimes, but you know, there's also other stuff. Yeah. You know, and you know, it's okay to watch both shows. This is not like, you don't have to pick sides.
Yeah,
you
know, we're incestual here. It's all good.
You can click both.
Can,
it's okay.
Yeah, dip in and out. It's a party.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just check, they're both great programs. Will does a great job over there. Make sure to give that a listen as well, guys. I'm Kevin Knight at Falcoholic. Kevin, please do like, subscribe to this program if you haven't done so already. Leave us that 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice. I believe we will be having our next live patron / channel member mock on Monday night once again, so that'll be this coming Monday. I will be making an official announcement on that soon, but I would go ahead and pencil it in that time for those of you live mock draft enjoyers. If you want to get in on that, you can join either here on YouTube as a channel member, or you can go to our Patreon, the link to which is in the show description, and sign up there. If you're more of a podcast listener, you probably want the Patreon. If you're more of a video enjoyer, you'll probably like the channel membership a little bit better. But either way, appreciate all you guys' support there as we inch closer and closer to the NFL draft. We are almost there. You know, many more mock drafts to go. It's gonna be a very busy mock draft season because you guys just eat them up, and I like doing them. So we'll do a lot of them. But obviously, we'll have the live draft party going as well. That'll be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And hopefully they'll trade away some of these 6-round picks so we don't have to stay super late. But, you know, we'll see. So far, Terry's done as a solid. He's never like, other than DeMarco Helms, never made 7th-round picks. So, you know, I've been enjoying that, getting to go home a little bit early. So we'll see if he can keep that streak going this year. But thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thanks to Will once again for joining us. We'll see you guys next time on the Falcoholic Live and Dirty Birds and Brews. Until then, have a great night, folks. Thanks.